Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Speaking of music and repetition, there's a band we love called Pink Martini. It's famous for a sound that's both deeply nostalgic and still somehow new. Pianist Thomas Lauderdale formed Pink Martini 20 years ago in Portland, Oregon. He was working in politics, thinking about running for mayor one day, and increasingly irritated by the music he heard at political fundraisers. Loud and boring is how he describes it. So he created his own little orchestra and began making sophisticated, old-fashioned pop and jazz with an international flavor. Doug Gordon talked with Lauderdale about what makes that Pink Martini sound.
You've described the band's eclectic repertoire as being a bit like an urban musical travelogue. That's such a lovely phrase. Can you elaborate on that?
It's like a sort of a rollicking around the world adventure. The band's repertoire is sort of like music of the world without being world music. When one thinks of world music, one thinks sort of almost a folk kind of thing. This is really more urban, nighttime, kind of cosmopolitan, almost cinematic in a way. The band is really a cross between, if you were to cross the Lawrence Welk show with the Muppet show, and maybe laugh in, and maybe all set it in the United Nations of 1962 lobby.
Do you see 1962 as being a particularly significant year in terms of world music?
Well, it was the year my parents got married, and they were really from the earnest side of the 60s. They met at Purdue in 1962. Actually, if I were to go back to college, I would do my thesis on the year 1964. Within 1 year of the death of John F. Kennedy, I think that there was a certain kind of optimism that totally vanished within a year of his death. And one can see it in all kinds of ways. 1964 was the year of the last sort of great optimistic American film, which actually, I think, happens to be The Sound of Music. 1964 is the last year that silver was actually in the actual currency. It was there, and then suddenly, after 64, it became something else, which represented, but it wasn't real. I think that things became more plastic after 1964. The American products, which before were sort of indestructible, whether it was a Ford car or a Polaroid land camera, became immensely plastic and throwawayable. Is that a word?
It is now. Anything you say is a word as far as I'm concerned. You're an American band from Portland, Oregon, but you spend a lot of time performing around the world. Do you see Pink Martini as being kind of a musical diplomat?
Absolutely. It's amazing because, like, in the 1950s, especially early 1960s, American artists, American bands, American singers sang a lot of songs in different languages. Connie Francis, for example, who's still alive, did whole albums in German and Hebrew and Italian and Spanish. And then there were people like Dinah Shore, the American talk show host of the 60s and 70s, who in 1965, she sang in 8 different languages on national television on a one-hour salute to the Peace Corps. Despite the Cold War, there was this kind of general curiosity about the world. I can't think of an example of any time in the last 20 years that there was a song sung in a different language besides English on national television.
Your singer, China Forbes, is only fluent in English, yet she's able to sing so convincingly in all these different languages. I think she's sung in like 15 different languages. How does she do this?
China also speaks French and Italian.
Okay.
One of the things about China that's amazing, you know, we went to college together. We were in the same college dormitory at Harvard, and she was the queen of the dining hall. She would entertain all of us for hours and hours and hours with her accents and her never-ending monologues, which were hysterically funny. So she's always been an incredible mimic and has an incredible ear, so she hears all of the subtleties in language. In regards to learning new songs, we always find a professor of that language or an expert and then go for it. And she's able to really sing convincingly in 20 different languages.
The latest Pink Martini album is Get Happy. It's your sixth studio album, and one of many standout tracks is a cover version of Kate and Anna McGarrigle's Kitty Come Home, and it's sung by Rufus Wainwright, who, of course, is the son of Kate McGarrigle and Loudon Wainwright III. What drew you to this song?
I've always liked Kitty Come Home, and for the first 5 years that I was listening to Kitty Come Home, I thought it was sort of a plea to a cat that was missing. You know, I met Rufus Wainwright in 1995 or 1996 when he first came to Portland to do his first show. 5 years sort of into our friendship, he revealed that it was written by his aunt, that song, as a plea to her sister, Kitty, Kate McGarrigle, Rufus's mother, to bring her children, Rufus and Martha, back to Canada and leave Loudon. And so it became this even more devastating song with much more meaning. I always thought that the song itself was so gorgeous, and with this additional meaning, it was like unbelievably heartbreaking. And so I helped coordinate a performance that Rufus did with the Oregon Symphony about 4 years ago and asked him if he would consider singing that song with the orchestra. And so he did, and it was so beautiful. And then when it came time to recording this particular album, I gathered the gumption and called Rufus to see if he would consider recording a song for it. I said, this is really your turf, this is your family history and all of that, so I understand if you would say no, but would you consider recording Kitty Come Home?
No scheme and no direction, with only one way to turn. Pack up all your children, come home to our love and concern. Kitty, come home.
We had a first career really in Europe more than we had one in the U.S. In the years following, we started playing with symphony orchestras. And, you know, with a band this size, which is 10 to 12 people, playing this sort of improbable music, it doesn't really even seem plausible that it would work. It's very compatible with a symphonic milieu. We played with 50 different orchestras across the country. It made it possible for us to actually have a career in the U.S. Between that, NPR, and Starbucks, which commissioned our holiday album, we've been able to really travel in the United States. It's not the kind of band where you get stoned and go down in one gigantic van and sleep on people's couches. Like, it's never really been that.
No, and especially now with the band having tripled in size, right? Because originally there were 4 members, and now you're up to 12, correct?
Right. And sometimes an additional 4, and sometimes we travel with even other. It's better to have more people than fewer. If we were a band of 4 still, the band would have broken up a long time ago. But by having a larger band, It disperses the bad energy. So if somebody's fighting with somebody, you can always talk to somebody else.
Yeah, because there are enough people to say, I hadn't thought of that. That's a very good point.
Pink Martini's leader, Thomas Lauderdale, was talking with producer Doug Gordon. The group's most recent album is called Get Happy and features a guest artist you might recognize, NPR White House correspondent Ari Shapiro.